Yeah, I reckon this will be less operational recruiter types and more like change managers, HR
Yeah.
change managers, and things like that. So yeah. Anyway, we're live, everybody. We are bringing it to you. It is Brain Food Live on Air, episode 146, everybody. We're here every Friday, no fail. And today I've got a really you know what? It's actually a very pertinent show because we're talking about a report that I looked at and reviewed last year about candidate experience, and we've just got the data for this year. So we might have the chance to kind of review basically how candidates have changed their attitude to the priorities they have when they look at jobs and going through process. So it should be hopefully this is the kind of thing that I'd look to do on an annual basis because I think this company is going to keep producing these reports. In which case, if we get early access to that, I see no reason why we shouldn't be able to report on the report, if that makes any sense. Anyway, let's firstly check some kind of audio visual stuff. Folks, if you're on Crowdcast, let me know whether the audio is okay. If you can hear me okay, just say hello. Yes, Hung, I can hear you. We should be blasting this out on LinkedIn. So if you're on LinkedIn and watching this for the third time this week, sorry to be like all over LinkedIn, but yes, I'm back on LinkedIn Live. If you can hear me on LinkedIn, let me know. Give me a thumbs up, thumbs down, something, comment, and let me know. We should be blasting this out also on Facebook into the group. I believe that's live now. And we're out on Twitter, I believe, as well. So boom, you're off there. Did you know like 60 viewers on average on Twitter?
Wow.
Quite impressive, hey?
Yeah. Hey,
Yeah.
Twitter.
Like say hello to them, they're there. All right, cool. A quick word to our sponsors before we kick off. Thank you so much to our sponsors this week. It is Chronify at chronify.com. If you don't know Chronify, you should. They are one of the few enterprise optimized interview scheduling tools out there. So if you're like fiddling around with Calendly and stuff like that and trying to get everyone to use like consumer level tools, that's all well and good. But you might want to roll out at some point an enterprise-wide solution that allows everyone to do it, get all of your hiring managers on board, get all of your stakeholders in there, all your recruiting team, and then you've got a single tool, single dashboard, great analytics, great integrations with almost all the ATSs out there. They are the company actually that's conducting this candidate experience report because I think they have recognized that inefficiencies in scheduling and inefficiencies in recruiting processing overall actually has a tremendous impact, negative impact on candidate experience, particularly too long between moments. Overall length is too long, not enough communication throughout because the recruiters are too stressed to update, all that kind of stuff. So check out chronify.com. They have actually produced a recruitment hub, actually, which they've told me to share. So here you go. Check that out. Get a demo if you haven't got a solution. Anyway, let's get on with the show. Welcome to Christine. Christine, great to see you back. You're very popular on the show, by the way.
Thanks. Hi, everyone. Great to be back. I am in the
This
middle
is
of a training session as well, so I'm kind of just ducking out very quickly to say hi.
Are people going to be looking over and thinking, where the hell is this
So
person? She should be.
thankfully, no. They're all breaking out sessions and talking about really kind of technical hardware stuff, which I can't really contribute much to anyway. So I was like, look, you're not going to miss me for the next hour.
Cool. Well, I'm really pleased to have you on. Thank you so
Yeah.
much for joining. It would be cool to dig into this topic in a bit more detail. But before we do that, we always review the newsletter from last week. So, question to you, Christine. Did you read the newsletter? And if so, what was interesting from last week?
Yeah, I mean, look, couldn't have picked a week to co-host with you, Hung. Some of them were like over 100 pages long. So I'm like, oh
You
my
didn't have to
God.
read them.
Well,
Just pretend.
actually, whilst we're on that, so I guess the first one, look, it'll be hard to ignore, the war that's going on right now. So it's got to be the Twitter thread. Excuse me if I'm not saying his name correctly, Adjirgli Oroj. Yeah, I mean that was interesting, right? Because I did kind of go down a bit of a rabbit hole. So for those of you who haven't read Brain Food and don't know what it is, it's a tweet where he just shared EPAM, which is of course a large kind of consultancy where they've got employees in Russia and in Belarus. So there was a thread kind of alluding to how tricky it was because at the time of when this tweet was posted, their EPAM CEO hasn't quite, I guess, made a comment about everything going on. So, you know, it was a whole thread and everyone's commenting on it. And actually, from my perspective, because to be honest, you know, I really had to do a little bit of a deep dive on it. It's just differentiating what's real news versus fake news as well, right? And actually, I think since Brain Food's come out till now, the CEO's actually since come out and obviously pledges allegiance with Ukraine. So yeah, it was really, really interesting thread to have monitored over the past week.
It's a really tough situation. And obviously, you know, everyone's minds are with, you know, people's who've got much greater challenges and issues to deal with. But it's every day that I'm getting a message from somebody who has employees in Ukraine, and they're kind of, you know, asking me for help. How can I help? I don't know. Like, I totally have no clue. And of course, this situation, which is not... which is not unusual, where you've got actually large populations of employees on either side of this terrible situation. Like, how are you going to handle that? I don't even know whether anybody's coached anybody to do this. And it must be extremely difficult. But yeah, anyway, that tweet thread's definitely worth reviewing. And in fact, Gugeli, if I've got his name right, I don't know if I have, he's a super person to follow on Twitter. Really, really good. He's mastered the art of recruiter Twitter, in my opinion. He's got some really good ways of just talking about deep topics. It's always sort of brain foody type stuff. So make sure you follow that. Okay, what else, Christine?
Well, the 127 pages of the Basic Principles of People Analytics. So that's the one I actually started reading. I started reading on a Monday. It's super interesting for those of you who are already have a solid people analytics team or don't. Like I don't, kind of going through the maturity of how kind of analytics kind of is embedded into the people world, right? And two things that kind of that stood out with me. I'm probably a third in, by the way. I'm not finished yet. The first one that stood out to me was they mentioned that total human cost comes up to about nearly 70% of all operating expenses, right? So top performers, which applies to software developers, where they mentioned this, the productivity difference of 10x. I'm like, oh my God, the 10x developer, you know, rhetoric again. And they mentioned, you know, Pareto's law, you know, the 20% of the population comes up with 80% of the value. So, you know, it's kind of, they were kind of talking about upskilling the people in those critical roles who actually deliver the most value. So, yeah, I mean, whilst I'm all for these metrics, you know, that 10x obviously has come up for a lot of debate within the technical world. So I just was kind of questioning some of the numbers that was actually shared within the book.
I'm gonna step up and go against the grain and say I believe in the stereotype of a 10x engineer. As a general rule, because I think there is a scenario where some people have extraordinary impact. And the vast majority of people, you know, including people like myself, have like mediocre impact. You know, I go in, I do a job, I'm pretty good. But, you know, if I didn't turn up next week, it's like the company doesn't fall apart. But then there's other people that come in and you know what? They just literally move it step change upwards. And I think a lot of this philosophy is, look, should you lean into those folks and actually really spend time trying to make them perform in a positive way? There's lots of interesting like and tough ethical issues to talk about here. Lots of these things go against our kind of conventional approach to equality and things like this. Yeah. But if we're looking at optimal performance, if that's the only thing we're thinking about, then maybe that's something we need to discuss. I don't know whether you read this other one, maybe 2 weeks ago, but there was another really interesting bit of research that suggested that the temporary absence of a 10x person to a team actually elevates performance.
Yes, I mean, so I guess that's the top grading element as well, right? Because they always say if you have A players and you hire other A players, it kind of brings up.
No, different idea.
Ah, so okay.
You have a superstar person in team.
Yeah.
Everyone leans on that person. They recognize implicitly this person's a superstar.
Right.
However, you take that person out, everyone thinks, oh, crap, Christine's out for the week. We got to step it up. And they all like boost up in order to compensate because they know that the key person's out. Now, I think that if this is true, then what we might want to do, ideally, we need to deliberately circulate these 10x people around because what you don't want is this person to be sitting in team all the time, and eventually the other guy or the other group gets lazy because you know, Christine has solved this tough problem, she's got it, and then you know you can coast.
I guess I see your point, and I think it's obviously important to be strategic, and I can go, we don't obviously talk about this all day. I think, yeah.
You don't like it. I get it.
The coaching aspect as well. So I think, yeah, up for debate.
I get it. You don't like it. And to be honest with you, I totally understand that I'll be in the minority view here because you couldn't practically do it. But I'm fascinated by the idea of how certain people have a disproportionate impact on team, negative and positive, by the way. Like you can definitely put in a minus 10 type person, like a divide by 10, I guess, that is so destructive.
Well, hopefully all the brain fooders can do their job. We're great practitioners and talent, so we will never, hopefully, bring on a minus 10.
I wonder whether it's even possible to deliberately try and be a divisive 10. Like how do I disrupt this? You could probably do it if you think hard enough. Anyway, it's a fascinating, it's basic principles, but it's a massive tome. And if you're interested in people analytics, I think at any level, entry level is totally accessible. But also if you've got some depth there, I think it's just a useful reference document as well. So go ahead and download that. That's an awesome piece.
Yeah.
Shared by Aaron Lintz, by the way, in the Facebook group. So thank you, Aaron. Okay, give us one more, Christine, before we get into this.
Yeah, it's got to be building a strong tech talent pipeline. I've actually seen that one circulated in a couple of the portfolio companies that we're working with at the moment. So for those who haven't read it, it's a step-by-step guide. I did find it quite US-centric for those of us that's not based in the US, but in essence, the actual content itself is also really relevant. So the seven kind of key steps that we should be thinking about. First one is, of course, always be recruiting. More than just so us as talent practitioners ourselves, I think it's also educating other peoples in the business. And I think the quote they had was Patty McCord, where she said she empowered other staff who found actually the best place to recruit was like at their kids' games, not cricket games, what do they play in US? Baseball. Yeah, at the baseball games. I was like, no, cricket, baseball. Yeah, so that was interesting. That was a really interesting thought in that perspective. So highly recommend reading this if you haven't read it yet.
Yeah, it's another one that's a good refresher, I think. And the ABC is a bit of a cliche, but it's absolutely correct because you have to always be doing it. But the recruiter's sort of the modern recruiter's job isn't to deliver the recruiting. It's to kind of move the organization into a recruiting posture, you know, in the same way marketing's job is to make sure everyone is in a marketing posture. You know, you're thinking about how the company presents. Recruiting, especially if you're going at a scale, a single function can't do that. Everyone's got to be able to do it. But everyone's got to be mobilized and motivated to do it. You can't just sit there and hector. You've got to find a way to encourage it to happen. It took me a little while to work this out, actually. I remember first job I had as an intern recruiter, I was struggling. I could have been fired, actually. I should have been fired within 3 weeks. I would have fired myself.
Were you the minus 10?
100%. Yeah. I was a huge drag. I don't say that as a joke. I think I was totally bad. But I managed to just get through it purely because I think like the company's in a growth track. Literally, I was a body and, you know, they had a number. Get rid of hunger would be just another role they had to fill. And eventually I figured it out and I thought, actually, I've got to get help. I got to get the team to help me recruit these people. Otherwise, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. And that kind of opened the light bulb moment kind of happened at that point. Anyway, that's cool. If you haven't read the newsletter, please do so. Obviously, it's going to be good for you. You can sign up on recruitingbrainfood.com. Happens every week. Okay, let's talk about this topic. There's a bit of data, actually, I'm going to go and share in a moment. In fact, let me do that now, because maybe that's something that you could help me talk through, actually, Christine. And before we bring on our friends Kevin and Chuck, I'm going to share screen real quick. Is this right? I've never actually done this, so you let me know whether it's right or wrong. So this is raw data, right? So I've only got this as a spreadsheet. They haven't even produced the report yet because they're a bit late behind it. But anyway, they shared the raw data with me, and I thought, right, I might as well just flick through this and see what's what. So can you see my screen okay, everybody?
Yeah, we can see it.
Yeah. I'm not talking about you, Christine.
I'm assuming everyone can see it, but yeah.
Okay, let me know in the comment if you can see it. If not, pipe up. Okay, so look, this is the size. You got 1,500 people responded. There's the gender split. I think it's more or less UK data. And it goes through these types of questions, 17 questions, which is, you know, trying to ascertain what degree of, you know, how job seekers thought about their job interview process. You know, so I thought, flicking through real quick, super interesting, like how long do the candidates expect the job interview to take to schedule a first interview after application? Obviously, no one, very few people expect at a day or less, but the most people now expect within a week. So I don't know whether that's changed from last year or whether that's like the new normal, so to speak. But the idea of sending an application in and not responding to people in, you know, a month or so, that's like long since gone away. Like significant and obvious amount got to be within 2 to 6 days. So super fascinating. Second question. How long would you expect to wait before you abandon the process? We have some super intolerant people here who would quit after one day, you know. So these folks here, if they didn't get a response, they'd be out of there, which I think is a little bit too prima donna. But the bulk of it seems to be within a week, doesn't it? So the expectation is in a week. And if it's not sort of after a week, basically they're distracted. They're going to go elsewhere. They're going to assume that it's out of there. So if you're later than a week, I think you've got a problem to almost re-recruit these people back because they're already on the downward trajectory and thinking, you know what, is this job for me? Moving on. Okay, have you ever left the recruiting process because you were frustrated with the time it takes to schedule an interview? Guess what I found was interesting about this one, Christine?
Let's have a look. So yes, total, no. The fact that more people said no,
I looked at the gender.
Oh, wow.
I looked at away. I thought, wow. So looks like men are less tolerant of this. Is that a pride thing or an ego thing? Whereas women seem to be a bit more resilient and they're seeming to say, hey, listen, I'm going to hang through this a little bit longer to get through to this process. So maybe they're a little bit more understanding of the process.
Yeah. Or suppose sometimes internal teams are busy. You got to wait a couple of weeks. You're busy. You've got other interviews going on and you're like, you know what? I just don't have time to wait.
That may be an empathy gap, you know,
yeah,
in the sense that maybe women are more able to kind of take a perspective on it where perhaps men see it a little bit more as, hey, listen, screw you, I'm out of there. But kind of relevant. It looks like it's like a decent sort of difference and relevant if, you know, you're looking at different sort of diversification issues and stuff like this. Yeah. You know, it looks like it could be a gendered response. Yeah. Okay, what about this next question? At what point would you disengage from an interview schedule or take a negative impression if it took too long? So at what point do you get disaffected by this thing? Again, looking at the data here, it looks basically post a week. You've got a week to do it, haven't you, as it seems to be?
Yeah. No, well, I guess if this was done in the last year, a lot of, assuming most of the interviews would have taken place remotely and online, right? So one would have thought the data from this year would vary from the year before, which is when the year before, I'm getting my years mixed up now with COVID. But yeah, I'll be interested to see what the trends are like once we started moving to a more hybrid and remote approach.
I think all of this was remote though, because we forget that we've been remote for nearly 2 years now. Yeah. So I think this is comparing like for like. I'll tell you what's interesting here was also the geographical differences, right? Yeah. And I was thinking, hey, maybe are the Northeast less like more easygoing than London? I think probably, right?
Yeah.
Looks like London is like faster. It's like the expectations are higher. So if your job is located in a different part of the country, you've got different periods of time before that candidate goes away. Mm. So again, super interesting stuff. Okay, let's fly through this. Does the process of interview scheduling that you experience and the time it takes affect your perception of the employer? This is EB, right? So is a bad recruiting process damaging to EB? I think we can guess it is.
Pretty much,
And yeah, it is, of course. 70 odd. Yes, no gender difference there. And also from a location point of view, broadly similar. You know, everyone is pretty much intolerant of that. Okay. Anyway, loads of this going on. I'm not sure whether we should continue with it. What's going to happen? I'll stop sharing. Am I back?
Yeah. Can everyone see us?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Can everyone see us here? Okay. Great. So Amy, I think she. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Amy's here. Fantastic. So Amy works for Chronify. They're actually doing this report now, and I'm not even sure it's actually. Yeah. Yeah. It's not ready yet. So this is raw data. But what you can do is download the report from last year, and then basically, I think there's a wait list or something. You can wait for the report that comes out this year. So that I think is just super relevant. It's UK data, but it's, I think, broadly relevant. It's quite interesting in terms of the question set. And it's looking at, you know, inefficiencies in process and how candidates think and feel about it. So super interesting stuff. Anyway, let's bring our, before I bring our guests on, though, Christine, let's ask you this question. I mean, having just joined Quantum Motion really 6 months or so ago, did you have to do any kind of re-engineering to the recruiting process in order to improve, I guess, the candidate experience of it? Did you spot a candidate experience area that you thought, you know what, this could be better?
Yeah, I think, well, A, there wasn't an ATS, so it was really hard to even track the data and everything, all the CVs and all the interviews were flying around hiring managers' emails. So first thing I did before even implementing ATS was actually just use a Jira board, because we had Jira implemented, just so we can just capture, okay, who's in the system? How long have they been in the process for? And exactly similarly, I guess, with the report that's been shared, it's like if they've been over the pipeline for 14 days, no one's responded to them, what are we doing? So it was just kind of minor tweaks that way. And I think for a team which has never had to hire in that way before, it's actually kind of more influencing behavior first before actually then putting any systems in place. So that was the first thing I did. So yeah, we have an ATS now, which I'm very excited about.
That's a classic upgrade, but it's almost like you can't blame the startup, right? Because at startup, at zero, you're not going to have an ATS. Yeah. You're going to do it by email and spreadsheet. Of course you are. And that's going to persist up until, you know, maybe 20 people even before it breaks down. So you can then, you know, you can then look to implement systems and tools and stuff. So, okay, let's bring on some of our guests. We've got two friends from the US to join us today. Two big hitters, actually. I haven't seen, we haven't had these folks on. I don't think Chuck's ever been on, actually. So this could be his debut. And Kevin, he has never been on either. And I think for Kevin, the reason why is because he's in Santa Cruz, West Coast. Oh, there's Chuck. There he is.
Hey there.
Chuck, how are you doing? Great.
I'm well.
Great to see you. Welcome
to
the show.
You as well.
Great. Chuck, for the people who don't know you, can you introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Sure. Chuck Solomon. I live in North Carolina, U.S. I am the director of employer brand for LifeStance Health. We're a large and growing, one of the largest outpatient mental health care providers in the U.S., is serving in 500 different locations across the U.S. and I think we're up to 32 states now. So, and that's my day job. I also host a podcast called the Candidate Experience Podcast. So appreciate you sort of recognizing me and inviting me on, and glad to be here. It's good to see Kevin.
Great stuff.
Hey, Jack.
Chuck, why don't you grab the link to your podcast and share it in the chat stream, man? I'm sure a lot of people will be interested in tuning into that. Kevin, welcome to the show. Great to chat with you again. And for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Sure. So my name's Kevin Grossman. I run Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Award. So for over the past 10 years, we've been doing benchmark candidate experience research with companies big and small across industries from all over the world. The biggest portion of it's North American based, but last year we did have 22,000 candidate responses from EMEA. And we also do it in APAC and Latin America. And that's what I do.
That's amazing. And you've got a book out soon, don't you, Kevin? Tell us a little bit about that.
Thank you very much. That was definitely a labor of love. So myself and then a recruiting practitioner, Adela Skolderman is her name, who did some work with us at Talent Board. We wrote a book together about the business impact of candidate experience. And it's a really comprehensive nuts and bolts. A lot of our research, a lot of things from pre-application to onboarding that we recommend that companies focus on when it comes to improving their recruiting, hiring, and how it impacts candidate experience.
Yeah, fantastic. And when's that coming out, sir, Kevin?
June. End of May, June. Yeah.
Fantastic stuff. So yeah, I think, you know, lots of recruiting books out there, but I don't think there's that many focusing on this particular area. So if you're going to go for any one tome on candidate experience, it's got to be this one. Okay, let's talk about sort of the shift. I think the focus I want to talk about is, what is the shift in your, what's your intuition, guys, about the shift of candidate priorities over the last 12 months? So let's recall 12 months or so ago, it was 2001, kind of into the spring. I believe it was like quite panic stations at the time. Lots of people were still sort of not sure what they were doing. We didn't have this huge bounce back in terms of hiring again. That happened later in the year. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, the candidates have had 6 months worth of abundance, right? They've had like lots of opportunities coming at them. Where have you seen their priority shift in terms of expectations? Chuck, go, throw it over to you. What are you seeing in your business and your with your lens?
Yeah, I for one thing, I would say that candidates are more expecting more of an experience like they would have as a consumer. So when I get on my app to order something on Amazon, I expect a certain, you know, expectation, and I expect that for any time I get online for a consumer experience. And I think that candidates are also really looking at that. That you mentioned the data before about like taking a week or more. The data that you just presented, you know, says a week, which I think is a reasonable period of time. But I think there's some candidates that are like, you know, I need this faster. I'm interviewing, I'm in high demand, I'm interviewing a number of different places. And if you as a company are going to take a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks in some cases, you're losing out. And I mean, that's what I'm seeing. I think the demand to have more of a candidate experience, more like a consumer experience. And I think the companies that get that, the hiring managers that get that, they're going to reap the rewards for that. And the companies that are still, there are some companies still out there that still think that, ooh, you know, they haven't gotten the memo that it's a candidate's market right now and for the foreseeable future as well. So
yeah, very interesting. I want to lean into this idea of consumer level expectation, because I've just had a quick mind experiment there about sort of my mind experiment. Why don't I just say thought? I mean, it's a thought.
are you psychic now, huh?
Hey, I just had an experiment. No, I just thought about it. But consumer experience online, right? I'm dividing it into two parts, where I'm thinking at a Amazon level, I want in and out. I want, you know, it's a small purchase, boom, boom, boom. I don't need to speak to anybody. I'm flying through it. I like an experience, a smooth, quick, 2-3 clicks, I'm through it. Brilliant. And then there's another type of experience online where I actually do want concierge. I don't want to have so quick a non-human experience. I need someone to speak to me. I need someone to tell me about it. I need someone to tell me it's okay before I go through. Do you think that there's a bimodal thing associated in job discovery as well? Or are we more one or the other? Or is this just my personality or what? How do you feel about this? Kevin, thoughts on this first?
So the fact of the matter is, the reality for most candidates is that they research a company and they apply, and most of that experience for any company of any hiring volume is going to be fairly automated, and it's very limited experience for candidates. And maybe in that case, they're going to get that quick automated consumer experience, but it's a much smaller group of people who get screened, assessed, interviewed, made offers to, and then those who accept are hired. And that's when you get the more human interaction, right? That's where there's more investment from you, the company, from the candidates themselves. So it's an uphill battle for most employers from around the world that have any hiring volume, because it is a very automated and impersonal experience, no matter what. Even if I want that 3-click touch. The fact of the matter is, if I am not qualified at the point of application, most companies are not getting any, there's nothing, there's no feedback at all. There is the autoresponder of, thank you very much for applying, we'll get back to you if you're qualified, and maybe the automated rejection. And that doesn't even happen. I mean, even in our data from around the world, that's not even happening in a timely fashion as much as it should. And for companies that have that recruiting culture of they're going to hold on to all candidates and resumes until the rec is filled, then we'll disposition everybody. That can be weeks or months later. And that, and people are gone. And like Chuck's totally right. Nobody is waiting around that way. I mean, we're, it's not just professional hires and management hires we're talking about. We're talking about hourly folks too, and our data shows that people aren't waiting for that anymore. But that's the unfortunate reality for most candidates. They're not going to be qualified enough to move on.
So you've introduced a couple of really interesting ideas there, Kevin, particularly about the kind of companies reluctantly deferring a rejection because they're waiting to fill the job, and that tells me that, I mean, I've done that as a recruiter. I've got to be honest.
Sure.
At a recruiter level, it makes, so this is where the incentives are not aligned, because you might have, let's say, a suboptimal candidate that isn't a precise fit, but you think they have a shot. You don't want to go straight away with in a 7-day process and say, look, you're out of it, because you may take 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks to process your optimal candidate, and you're like in this juggling situation. So, like, is that a fixable, like, it's unacceptable but explicable, right? So how do we fix that problem? Is that something that we can improve in some way, this like tension between what is optimal for a recruiter and what is best for the candidate? Open to anybody to answer that.
Yes. Go ahead, Jack. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so if someone applies and they're underqualified, let those people know as soon as possible.
Exactly.
I would say within one business day, okay? Because you might have one job opening, you're going to hire one person, you have 250 people apply. You don't want the 249 people that applied, you know, to be upset or impact your, you know, your consumer brand either. Like, you want to make sure that you let people know. I think for a long time, people in recruiting were like, oh, we want to hold on to. I'm like, if someone is unqualified, let them know right away, because you're not doing yourself any, you know, you're not doing yourself any good there.
We could agree with that, Chuck, and I do agree with you. I think the auto reject, like someone who's clearly not right, you can say and progress no too quickly. But what about the body of candidates that are maybes? Like, what do we do with those folks? I think we don't do anything, but we should do something. Is it okay to go and speak to them and say, look, you're a maybe, but you're not perfect?
Well, I mean, I don't, well, I don't know if you want to position it that way exactly, but I mean, I think that there's something to be said. If there's somebody who's in the running, I mean, it depends on if you're hiring more for potential and not exact fit, because the exact fit we all know does not exist for most, and especially for hard to find folks and positions that you're trying to fill, it does not exist. So I think that there is the key. Here's the thing. Every year we're asked at Talent Board, what's new and fresh about candidate experience, Kevin? What's new and fresh? And now I'm like this old, grumpy old man in my robe, standing on my front porch, saying it's the same things every year. It's timely communication and feedback. It's transparency. It is expectation setting. Get off my lawn. I mean, I'm being serious, though. I mean, it's those things every single year. So I think the answer to your question, Hung, it's about how do you communicate to those folks that have potential then, right? Mm-hmm. And can just letting them know, be transparent about the situation. You don't want to tell them that you're the lukewarm folks, but let them know, right?
You're kind of all right. You're not perfect, mate, but sit where you're at, okay?
I kind of like you.
You can say this, can't you, Christine? Like, there is a way you can frame
this. There is. And I think it depends on the role, really. You know, when you're working in like really highly technical roles, you'd be lucky to have three candidates in the pipeline. So you only have three candidates. Exactly. You, of course, should be able to manage your time and, you know, divide amongst all three. But like recently, you know, we're hiring for interns at the moment, and we I'm hiring for a really senior role at the moment. And there was a really junior person who would have been a really great fit actually for this really senior role, maybe 3 years down the line. So in those particular scenarios, even though we know we're not actively hiring right now, we will say, look, let's jump on a quick call, find out more, a little bit more about you. But unfortunately, we don't have a vacancy right now, but pipeline them, right? Keep them in the loop. So for the really high potential ones, Kevin mentioned earlier, I think you should definitely pick up the phone and just introduce yourself. And, you know, they may accept another role elsewhere, but at least a year or 2 years from now, you can re-engage with them. But the maybe maybes, because I definitely also always keep a maybe pile. I don't tend to really action on them for the high volume roles just yet, just because of time capacity. So
yeah, this is where we need like a robot to help us. So I'm thinking, Okay, we've got an application. There's 100
people.
We do
now, though. We have lots of robots to help us. Huh?
Yeah, but we're not deploying them, right? So let's say there's 100 people coming at us as in one application. There's going to be 10% that definitely knows the boom, automated rejection. Sorry, Kevin, you're way off. You're not coming in. Boom, done. Then there's 10% that are really good. Call them straight away. You're into interview. Let's go process. Boom, boom, boom. 80% are maybes. And I think they're a third bucket. You tag them somewhere else to say a maybe. And there's some sort of message to tell them. Say, and this is where the transparency comes in. You're not BSing them. You say, listen, thanks for your application. Mm-hmm. You got a lot of qualities that we think could be a potential for us. You're probably not the perfect fit at this point. So, you know, we can't give you a hard deadline as to when we can progress, but we will be moving forward with you if we can. Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, agreed.
Around that. So if, you know, if everything is automated, right, how do you actually make a rejection email for the maybes a little bit more personalized if everything is automated, right? Like, do you add another extra, you know, content in there, or is it just your generic rejection messages? You know, like, I think someone mentioned this in the chat earlier. How do you have different flows for
well, you have to, I mean, you can try. I mean, here's the thing, as employers, regardless of size and scale and scope, you control the dials of any automation that you have. You control what you say, when you say it, how you say it, how frequently you say it. So you can control those communications, right? But you have to take the time. And the part of the issue is for companies right now with recruiters who are carrying 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 plus recs for some of these companies right now, there's no room to time to do anything else, right? And the fact of the matter is, but we still, if you took the time to control and do a, like a communications audit, and work on those workflows and at the point of disposition and what you're saying when you do have more control over that. It's still, it's not the same thing as human interaction, but you can personalize a little bit more than just canned out of the box responses.
Yeah, I think you don't want to have a single generic. I think we're too bimodal, basically. We're either yes, definitely, and no, definitely. But actually, most people are maybes, but we just don't deal with the maybes. Yeah. And maybe that can, and that's the biggest number of people. So we should do deal with something there. Okay, so that was one thing that was interesting that came out of that. You mentioned crikey. Kevin, there's something you said that was so interesting, and I totally wandered off my mind.
I don't even know what happened 5 minutes ago, so sorry.
I know, my brain is like baked away. This separation between where the candidate experience is. So automated is when basically you're making the assessment as to whether they're suitable or not. But when they're involved in process, that's when you need to like significantly step up your concern and your effort level, because they're stepping up their concern and effort level. They're coming in to interview, let's say, or they're doing a Zoom call, or they're doing something that's taking time out of the day. So you need to absolutely reflect that and get better at it. And that's where I guess the human stuff comes in, supported by technology, I guess.
Candidates, from our perspective, and with all the research that we've done over the years, regardless of what the world looks like, and it's still on fire right now, unfortunately, and there's just so many things that impact the businesses, that impact recruiting and hiring, but candidates only care about one thing, getting the job, the job that they want. They don't care, especially, they don't care about your recruiters, your processes, your tech stack. They don't care about any of that. They just care about getting the job. But everything you do, right, as a recruiting organization, that your technologies, your processes impact their perception of fairness and the experience every minute of every day, period. So the fact of the matter is that that consistent communication, it's just always a perennial differentiator every single year in our data, communication feedback, not only asking for feedback, But giving feedback, especially to finalists, you're not going to do it at the point of application. But those finalists that you're going to say, sorry, we're going to pass on you now, giving them some job fit qualification status reason why goes so far in our data and the overall candidate ratings. And the highest rated companies in our data every year, they're doing those things. They're doing timely dispositions. They're giving feedback to finalists. They have structured interview processes. I mean, the list goes on. They're doing all those things. They don't do it right all the time, but they are more consistent. And the hardest thing in the world that we see is companies sustaining it year after year.
Mm.
Interesting.
It's a capacity issue, isn't it? At the end of the day, I mean, I know recruiters get a lot of bad rap. And if anybody's watching this or listening to it that's not a recruiter, I'm sure you've had your gripes at your experiences as a candidate. You know, we've been candidates ourselves. We've had gripes on in our own community. We get it. But I think the numbers of people that are bad in this job in terms of like morally a character flaw bad is actually quite small. Most of us are just overwhelmed, and we don't have the time. And either we forget, or we just like we're going to get to it with all sincerity. We just haven't been able to do it. And then next day comes, and there's another load of stuff coming at us. And it's very difficult. So maybe companies will also need to expand the capacity, have a bit more slack within the group, you know, like instead of specking out, oh, we need 10 recruiters because we've got 150 jobs. Actually, you probably need 14 recruiters or something like that. Just over hire just a little bit to give yourself a bit of slack and therefore improve the experience each one of those recruiters can give to the candidates. Okay. Talking about communication, I want to just introduce a quick tip. This tip you need to take with a lot of salt over the shoulder because I haven't been a recruiter for a long time. But I do this in my personal relationships, right? So I'm not sure anybody who's my friend, you tell me whether this is good or bad. But I think one of the ways in which you could efficiently update people is not to speak to them synchronously because that takes time. You don't have time for that. You could do a Loom call or something or a video note to give them an update, right? Mm-hmm. It's what I do for my ma. I mean, I love it. It's perfect. I don't have the time to speak to her every day, ma. You know, she's going to keep going. Send her a video note. Boom. She's happy with that. You know, it takes me 2 seconds. Actually, it takes me about 5 seconds because all she wants is an update. So if you treat your candidates a little bit like a person that you obviously care about and you want to update, but there's not much to talk about right there and then, send them a Loom or something, or send them a video note on WhatsApp, or send them something on LinkedIn even. I think LinkedIn allows a video note these days. That personalized, it's really fast. It's faster than typing a message, trust me. So you know, I think it's something you can do anyway.
Hey, there's a platform my wife uses with some family too, where it's the same kind of thing where you leave video notes, you just it's like video texts is what it is.
The pretty question cool, I have actually. Is well, obviously, I think once a candidate's in the process, right, they should expect personalized feedback, etc. But is there a fine line between, say, a WhatsApp or a LinkedIn message? You know, the medium of what you're getting the message from. For example, I'm getting WhatsApp messages from estate agents right now, and I'm a bit like, whoa, hang on a minute, it's a little too close.
Is that too intrusion, personal intrusion?
Yeah, exactly. It'd be interesting to see what modes candidates would be comfortable with hearing from us.
Good point.
Well.
I think a Loom video is probably the safest thing, right? So you download Loom. It's on email, you're not going into their phone or private stuff.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, they can watch it. You've definitely personalized it. I think one of the best things on video is that it's a definite personalization. Mm-hmm. You can't fake it, or it'd be very difficult to fake. But you're right, Christine. I think if you're hitting people up in their hitting their DMs or something, maybe not the best move.
But Christine, to that point too, and I think that so many organizations have such tight security IT.
Good point. Frameworks now, right.
Where they're pretty limited in what you want to do. I mean, we're working with companies where, because I've been using Google Docs and Google Suite for a long, long time and Zoom, and there's companies that block all that now. And all they're using is Microsoft Teams, for example, which I can't stand, but you didn't hear me say that. Anyway, but the point is that, did you hear that? Dang it. But I mean, so you're also at the mercy of what you can use actually inside your own firewall, et cetera, to communicate with the candidates. Texting, though, not video, I agree totally with. Texting is, there's a much higher deliverability rate, period, right? So companies who are experimenting with that now and using text platforms to notify candidates about jobs, the next steps, expectations, because emails are going into, you know, it's harder and harder to deliver emails. And think about positions you're hiring for where there are people who may be using that email for their job, but they're not really checking it that often. And it's getting caught in their spam filters. No wonder so many candidates say never heard back too.
I think you're right. I think text is, it's massively used much more in the States actually than elsewhere. Because elsewhere everyone seems to be using WhatsApps and stuff like this.
That's true. So that's also, exactly right. Also, right.
There's like regional divisions, but I think there's a powerful argument because text does get delivered. Everyone's got a mobile. The truth is everyone can use that. Even like a non-smartphone, you know, you can take that globally. So yeah, maybe we need to bring that back. Okay, so folks, we always do this in the middle of the show. The purpose of taking a small break at this point is because obviously this is a fascinating conversation, but at some point, Brain Food Lab does have to stop. And what we don't want is for this conversation to basically stop when we have to come off air. So if you're interested in the topic, you want to deep dive with other people that talk and care about candidate experience, now is the time to try and expand your network and connect with those folks. So why don't you take a minute, take your LinkedIn profile and stick it in the chat stream, stick it in the comments on LinkedIn, and just connect with everyone else who's done the same. There's hundreds of people watching this. There's no reason why everyone couldn't walk away with, you know, a couple dozen cool contacts that basically care about topic. Please continue the conversation. Don't let, don't let my need to have a bath later this afternoon to stop you from having a great conversation about candidate experience, you know? Okay, let's go back to how these things have changed in time. So Chuck, you led us off by saying sort of increased kind of expectation on a consumer level expectation of candidate experience. Second point was like, I think speed, right? They wanted like, I think we know it's within a week if you apply, basically I need to know within 5 working days whether I'm something. We talked a little bit about the maybes. What other changes have you seen in the last 12 months? So within the COVID period, in terms of candidate expectations and where their priorities have shifted in somewhat with regards to what they expect from employers.
I think going back to what you're talking about, the so-called 10X candidate there, I'm hearing from recruiters that first off, there's a lot more people that think they're the 10X person when they're really not. But a lot of those individuals are having really quick communications with recruiters, and all they want to know is, what is the job title? What's the rate? What are they getting paid? And this is like the shortened text version to the recruiters. Where's the job? What's the rate? That's it. And it never gets past that. So there's some level, and this is probably more for technology workers, if you will, which are in super high demand in the US and globally, obviously, and stuff. But what's the rate? They just want to know what the pay is. Traditional interviews, usually the pay comes up at the last few minutes of the conversation, but it's happening a lot sooner now. People want to know.
So that's a really good point. Prior to all, maybe the last 20 years have changed, but certainly when I came into the recruiting world, it was almost taboo to talk about the money until the end. Like we kind of generally have an idea where ballpark is. Maybe we have a quick qualification call, but it would always be a big bracket. And yeah, sure, you know, the stuff we can do. And then towards the end, when it got serious, we'll talk turkey. But what you're saying now, Chuck, is maybe because there's so many opportunities coming their way, candidates can't process them, so they're making like really like a high bar, even an artificial bar, because maybe they would consider, you know, a slightly a lower option. They just can't do the due diligence on them all and say, look, if it's not this, I can't do it, sorry, and then they're moving on.
And also to that point, to add to that, you know, traditionally employers have not put the salary range and the job descriptions, the job ads, like that's something they haven't done. And it's, you know, it's been the company's prerogative not to do that. But I think we're seeing more and more companies actually put ranges in there. In the U.S., the state of Colorado and New York City, and I think there might be some other places, which is actually required by law now. And I suspect more states are going to do that, where you have to put the salary ranges, the minimum and upper ranges, in your job description so people know. A lot of that has to do with trying to fight the, you know, disparity between gender pay and all that, which I think is a good thing, to have equal pay there. But I think other companies are voluntarily putting that out there so people can see what that is. That makes a whole lot of sense. But when you open up your books like that, your competitors see that as well. So I'm not sure if you're giving away your competitive advantage, but you know, if you're displaying your salaries, then guess what? Your competitors see that too. So
it's a real mixed bag. It is. I totally agree, because it's about context, right? And regional differences of where you live and where you work. And now you throw in the hybrid remote work environments that, folks are going to get paid less if they're not living in the Bay Area at a Silicon Valley tech company versus living in Colorado. There's 8 or 9 states now, I know, that have pay transparency, salary transparency laws, and that's only going to continue to grow. But it is, if you have all this legacy salary history and who gets paid what, and it's maybe for smaller, like startup, high growth companies that are more transparent out of the gate, that makes sense. But it's going to be harder for more complex companies that have, again, salary legacy. So I agree with you on that. And I don't know how much of a competitive advantage and disadvantage, or is it a wash at the end of the day too? But from a candidate's perspective, I want to know. Mm. I want to know.
Mm. Yeah, I think from a CX, basically the transparency is going to help, because you wouldn't even go there if it was too low, right? So you kind of lose the moral authority to argue the case. If you've applied to a job, it says it's this, and you're now demanding that, then you've got no leg to stand on. So I think from a CX point of view, it definitely is an improvement, but it's a complicated topic. We'll do a Brain Food Live on this, because it's not straightforward. I do, think too often we take a moral view on it, saying transparency good, non-transparency bad. But you know what? There's lots of reasons why companies may not be able to immediately switch this on. Right. And also, it's a case where the ones that can do transparency, I think sometimes they do it in order to position themselves as a morally positive business, but they happen to be market leaders in the business. They happen to have loads more money than everyone else. Of course, they're going to blow everyone out of the water. Lots of companies don't actually have that margin. They can't do it. So it's very difficult. But I think we're all trending towards that direction. I wonder whether anybody saw Colorado, was it Expose or something? Is it this? Yeah, Colorado Excluded. I love this. It was in Brain Food last week, referring exactly to this idea. I think in Colorado, you have to publish a salary for all jobs. Which applies to the candidates. And basically there's lots of companies saying, hey, if you're in Colorado, you don't apply. And there's actually a website here which is like collecting it all together and kind of trying to shame these companies, saying, okay, here are all the companies that are saying, trying to veto Colorado candidates. I thought that was quite funny. Anyway, okay.
Well, if you've got Amazon and Apple and Facebook, and when they've increased their base pays for developers, right, from 180 to 250 to 350, and there are companies, there's just no way that can compete with that. But that's where it's got to be more, it's got to be more than just about the salary at that point for the right candidates. And and if it's, even if it's a toxic environment, I mean, there are people who still who want to work at Facebook, they want to work at Amazon. Doesn't matter what Glassdoor says at the end of the day for them, right? And maybe they want to do that stint, but it is a complicated matter no matter what.
Okay, a quick one for the folks here. If there's anybody's got any questions for Chuck, Christine, or Kevin, please do use the ask a question feature at the bottom of the screen. We'll get to them in a bit. I can see already one question's asked, but put your questions in there. We'll review it. Let's move on to kind of what companies can like practically do to improve candidate experience in the current sort of environment that they have. And I know we could kind of admonish companies just do better, but is there anything practical that can they can immediately do? Any thoughts on this? Again, open it out to everybody. Chuck, let's go to you first, if you don't mind me leaning on you again.
Sure. I just heard about this a week ago from an actual company. They're actively hiring, and they got 700 people apply in the last like 90 days. And I said, great, how did you disposition them? And they're like, well, we haven't even reached out to them. And I was like, okay. So like, didn't your applicant tracking system at least send an autoresponder saying, thank you for applying, you know, we're going to work through all the applicants there? The answer, no. And so for them, big miss. So
just turn it on. Tell them to turn it on, Chuck.
Yeah, I'm like,
turn it on.
I don't know of any applicant tracking system that can't at least have that autoresponder. We expect that going back to the consumer, you know, consumer end of things. When you buy something, you get an auto email back acknowledging that you bought something. So turn it on. It's a very simple thing. Like,
well, hang on, Chuck, let me interrupt here. Is it a case that these things are default? I haven't used an ATS in anger for years. Like, so you're saying basically these things more or less are built in. Is it a switch on or a switch off? Because perhaps that's one way the industry could immediately improve by defaulting to switch on. And if for some reason you got a problem with it, then switch it off. Folks, let me know your ATS that you're using now. It has an auto reject feature. Is it switched on by out of the box, or do you need to take action in order to do that? Because I'd be very interested if that's the case. Presumably, it should come out of the box switched on. I mean, I'm thinking that could immediately help everybody.
Can't you need to configure it, I think, just a certain,
No one's going to configure it. It's like,
But it depends on if you're auto screening based on keywords, that would then automatically reject, or if you're a recruiter reviewing it and then you click disposition in the ATS and then that triggers the message that goes out. I mean, there still has to be some, I don't think it is as simple as just one switch necessarily, unless you are auto screening, but it is something you can, like I said earlier, right, Chuck? You control the dials.
Yep.
You see, right? this is where it all falls down, though. You've got human beings like who are basically just shaven monkeys who are on keyboards. You can't rely on them. You've got to have a system in place.
But let me tell you a really quick story. Years ago, we did a candidate experience workshop back in the old days when we used to get together in person, remember? So. But this was one recruiter in the room. We were sitting around sharing positive and negative experience. And it was, again, somebody in the recruiting industry who was interested in a job, was applying for it, had networked in, took her time filling out the application online, hit submit. And what do you think happened? 30 seconds later, auto reject. That is way too soon, right?
Yeah.
48 hours. But I can tell you the best practice that we're seeing with companies that have above average ratings, they're doing a lot of things consistently over time. But one of them is timely disposition within 3 to 5 days, if not 1 to 2 weeks, for those who aren't qualified or at any stage.
Yeah. So there should be like a written rule then, like software engineers who are actually writing software for ATSs, like don't do a 10 second auto reject. That's not good. You know, like literally minimum, just plug it in, hard code it in 24 hours. Like that's the earliest the person can be auto rejected 24 hours. It will help candidate experience across the board globally, right? Globally, don't do this. Okay, let's go to questions. We've got two questions. We'll steal them. First one, we've got Michael Blakely. Michael saying, what advice steps would you give difficult hiring managers to buy into a candidate experience first? Okay, this is critical. So you've got like a skeptical hiring manager. He doesn't care. He or she does not care. You got to convince them otherwise. Who wants to have a go at answering this one?
I will.
Go ahead, Chuck.
I think, and we haven't talked a lot about hiring managers. Hiring managers are a critical part of the whole interviewing process, the whole candidate experience, obviously. And I talk to hiring managers often, and I, as a recruiter, you have to explain this to hiring managers, like, and you, probably have to beat them over the head a bit with it, that we're in a different marketplace. It is a candidate marketplace. They need to go ahead and revise their thinking. They also need to revise their thinking on, did we go out and source this candidate or did this candidate apply? We've talked a lot about applying, but there's a lot of harder to fill jobs where recruiters have to go out and find the people. And I think you have to treat those people a little bit differently. And the hiring managers need to treat them differently as well. If we're going out and trying to find someone, it needs to be a bit of a different experience, more of a, for lack of a better word, white glove experience. But the hiring managers need to be clued in on this. Ultimately, the pain is really felt on the hiring manager's shoulders as well. If you don't have a full complement of staff working for you, you're not going to meet your deadlines, your projects not done. If you're in sales, you're not going to meet sales goals. So really, it's the hiring managers feeling a big brunt of this. So I think gently reminding them or hitting them over the head with this fact that they need to be part of this. One other point I'd make is that to become less reactive to hiring, like hair's on fire, we need to hire 25 people yesterday. Like, businesses do planning. We're planning ahead. We set goals, things like that. You know, if we know we're going to be hiring 6 months from now, let's not wait 6 months. Yeah. Let's start talking to people today.
Yeah.
Like,
sorry, I laugh because there's a good friend of mine called Danny Hodgson who runs some tech business. I forget it, Foresight. It's all it is about forecasting, like your exactly. How many people you got to hire. And he's always talking about this. Like, all recruitment problems are done through a lack of foresight. If you planned it in advance, you'd solve all the problems.
Yeah.
Okay, Chuck, really good. Let's go to the final question. This is from Smella. Smella is saying, okay, what are your thoughts on candidate experience surveys given to new hires in order to evaluate your recruiting process? So in other words, you've hired the person, they've come through successfully. What do you think of the of giving them a candidate experience survey? Thoughts on this?
So let me jump in on that.
You.
No, Chuck, I appreciate it. And it kind of relates to what you were just talking about too, because it's that kind of data, that survey data, that feedback data is what you can also show your hiring manager. So if you're, and by the way, surveying new hires is extremely important, but keep in mind there's going to be a positive skew in the data most likely because of what you just call the halo effect, right? I got the job, I'm getting hired, I'm more likely to rate you higher, especially at the point of onboarding and with early on. Now that tenure, that, you know, later on in the year, that might change overall if you were to survey them again, like now that I'm inside and not having a good time. But surveying new hires is extremely important. That's where most companies are the most comfortable with, first and foremost. What I would argue is that you need to be surveying your rejected candidates. You need to be getting an understand, whether that's in our benchmark research program or your own continuous feedback. You just get SurveyMonkey or another tool and do something and ask them at the point of disposition, tell us about your experience. How likely are you to apply again? How likely are you to refer others at a minimum? Those are key indicators, and that is the data. And if you can tie that data to specific recruiters and hiring managers, then Chuck, there's something that you can go to that hiring manager and say, I need to sit down and talk to you about this. Yep. The candidate resentment right now is higher than what we want it to be, and we're losing these candidates because of what they're telling us. The number one reason, one of the number one reasons why candidates withdraw from the process, especially later on, is their time was disrespected during interviews and appointments.
Yeah, absolutely. And that word is really positive. Not really positive because it's a negative word, but the candidate resentment, I think that's a term we need to internalize in our in thinking about candidate experience. Like, at what point a candidate, like, what is the number of candidate resentment here? Give us a score on that, because you need to moderate that, need to work on it and work it down. So really good stuff, Kevin. Okay, we're at the end of the show, folks. We have to go. Again, we have much more to talk about. This is the reason why you should share your LinkedIn, because go and connect with all of these people and continue to chat off screen in your own spaces as you go forward. So Chuck,
I just plugged my book too, just sorry. No, since we're hoping, throwing things out there, so there
I was hoping you were going to do that earlier, Kevin. So yeah, well, by all means, so. I've I've read this book, by the way. I think it's excellent. So go ahead and grab a copy of that. Awesome. Chuck, great to see you. Thanks for coming on to the show. We'd love to get you back if you're up for it. You have a good day. Kevin, great to see you too. Thanks for jumping on. Great to chat with you earlier this week, of course. And yeah, we'll get you back onto the show, of course. Whenever you're time zone wise, you're coming into Texas and stuff
like that. I know. It helped that I was a little bit later this time. So
that's the only reason why I haven't brought you on, because I hate to get people up too early. Anyway, I'll speak to you soon, Kevin. Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Smart folks, hey?
Yeah, it was great. Learned a lot.
Yeah, you got to go. I noticed people are knocking on your door.
Well, I noticed people kind of, I'm not sure if it's like a break. So I was just seeing what's happening. So either that or they're leaving. I'm not sure.
Are you breaking some relationships right now?
I think they're doing their breakout sessions because most of the bulk. So yeah, we're doing an agile training in the business. So I think it's a breakout session happening.
Okay. So I'm going to let you go and go do that. So thank you, everybody, for watching the show. Hope you've enjoyed it. We're back next week. We're talking about ideal time to post a job ad to maximize applicant flow. Super, super relevant. We're going to get algorithmic sort of big data from Appcast. They're going to share with us, okay, this is when you should post it. This is how long your job title is going to be. Oh, did you know you should post it this time of the week rather than that time of the week? Like critical information. Make sure you sign up to the show. Follow the channel, by the way. It's probably the best way to do it. Follow my LinkedIn on the notifications. Click that bell and you'll be able to get notified when we go live. So, yeah, that's about it, folks. I'll see you next week. Cool.
Have a nice weekend.
All right. So, Christine.
All right. See you soon. Well, let's go for three uncles.
I was about to message you. Did you see they opened up a place in Brixton?
Yes, and it's amazing. And I messaged a friend today, so she sent me her lunchbox. And I was like, how much is it in Hong Kong? She's like, oh, you know, 60 Hong Kong dollars, which is £6. She's like, how much is it there? I'm like, at least 13 pounds, you know, so double.
That's still cheap for a London-based hot meal, right?
I'll
tell you something. There is an offer in the Brixton thing. I think if you're the first within the first 328,
there's going to be more than 300 people there. It's been open for more than a week. It opened like 2 weeks ago. But I know because I sent it to my mate who lives in Brixton.
Is Brixton miles away from you? I don't know where you live in these
days. No, I'm still in Rotherhithe. It's closest. I'm actually going there tonight, but not for that. For a mate's house. But yeah, let's go.
I don't mind Brixton or wherever it is. So let me know next week if you want to do it. We can do it.
All right. Have a nice weekend. Right. Thanks for that was great.
Ciao, no worries. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, that's it, folks. Hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks for watching.